This is common ground. Last fall, Israel and Jordan signed their own bilateral peace accord. Could they be a model for peace in the Middle East?
Life in Israel, prior to the peace era, was kind of a living on an island. We had the Mediterranean on one side, and we had borders on the other side. Borders that you could not cross.
What we are after is to put a model in the heart of the Middle East, in the hub area, that peace between people is achievable.
A model of Israel and Jordan.
Israel and Jordan for the whole Middle East.
Now, Israelis can travel to Jordan, Jordanians can travel to Israel, and the lines are so long that it seems that everyone is interested to see what was happening beyond those barbed wires.
We'll talk to diplomats from Israel and Jordan on this edition of Common Ground. Is a program on world affairs and the people who shape events. It's produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. The search for peace in the Middle East has been a stop-and-go process ever since Israel signed a peace treaty with Egypt in 1979. The 80s were a decade of little progress, and then 1994 brought two major breakthroughs. First, Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization signed an accord, then Israel and Jordan. Now, Israel and Syria are moving forward in their peace talks. With me to talk about what the peace treaty has done for Israel and Jordan in the past several months are Dr. Fayez Taraoneh, Jordan's ambassador to the United States, and Shlomo Gur, Israel's deputy ambassador to the U.S. We begin with Shlomo Gur, whom I asked what's changed in the world that we see this progress in the Middle East.
The late 80s and the beginning of the 90s were an era of change. Major changes took place in the globe, and that did not skip the Middle East. And the collapse of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, the war in the Gulf, enabled this whole changes to reform itself into that new, and to serve as a kind of a jumping board to the new phase of peace. And on the 30th of October 1991 was the historic meeting in Madrid, which under the co-sponsorship of the U.S. and the Soviet Union enable us to move, as we reached to the first agreement with the PLO in September 93, and the highlight of this process until now, and I hope there will be more, was the peace treaty with Jordan that was signed in October 94.
Ambassador Taraoneh, do you see any other factors that have led to this moment of peace accords and movement in the whole peace process?
Well, the Middle East has its own logic, unfortunately that peace was the last resort. Though war should be the last resort, not peace, but never too late in the fate of nations. I would say that the countries in the region came to their rationale, and they just realized that we exhausted ourselves over the last 47 or 48 years of struggle, and it's high time to grab the momentum of the changes in the international relations. Shlomo put some important factors that really put us on the table together. I might add also that as we know that the Palestinian question is the core of the whole issue. And 7 years of uprising in the West Bank itself put the Israelis and the Palestinians and some of the Arabs who were advocating the peaceful settlement in a mood of peace rather than in a mood of war. And maybe this is one of the fortunate thing that that happened within the occupied territories. And this led also to the breakthrough of the Palestinian-Israeli track. At a point of time, we were unable to let the Palestinians participate in the process, and we had to provide the Jordanian umbrella and the Jordanian-Palestinian joint delegation. But then they departed, and they had the secret talks in Oslo for, what, 8-9 months, and they came up with the Declaration of Principles, and that was a breakthrough. But I think they built on the agony and the suffering of the last years on both societies, not only on the Palestinian, but also on the Israeli society. And I always had the conviction that Israel wanted to be an integral part of the Middle East. And of course, the peace process, the whole peace process, want to solve the roots of the whole conflict. Israel should be part of the Middle East. And at the same time, the Palestinians have the right for their own national aspirations.
As you said, the Palestinian question is at the core of the whole issue in the Middle East. And as you know, some people say Jordan is the Palestinian homeland. But do both of you see sometime in the not too distant future a separate homeland in the Middle East for Palestinians?
Well, first of all, maybe some say that Jordan is the homeland of the Palestinians. I never heard this from a Palestinian, by the way. They have their own aspiration. They agreed, and they took their own independent decision to recognize Israel, and they were the first to recognize Israel, even before us. That was just before the 13th of September of 93. That means they recognized Israel as a state on the land of Palestine. And they are now negotiating on the rest of the West Bank and Gaza. I, as a firm position of Jordan, we do not interfere in the Palestinian-Israeli track. Even when we had the umbrella or the joint delegation, we thought that that was only for the opening ceremony of Madrid. But they have their own independent track. They have, we believe in the self-determination of the Palestinian people, including, of course, the statehood. And this is a matter of negotiations with the Israelis on the final status. How would they end up formulating their own destiny? So I wouldn't negate, because in the, to my understanding, that in the final status, all options are open, and it's a matter of negotiations. And we will help all parties to in all capacities, really, to make this again another successful story.
And Mr. Gurr,
as we started negotiations with the Palestinians at the beginning under the Jordanian umbrella, later on separately, independently, and with the goal to find a solution to the conflict between the Palestinian people and the people of Israel. What form, what shape of solution will be decided and agreed upon, that is for the negotiations with reference to the final status to decide. In the meantime, what was agreed upon in the Declaration of Principles and following of that, the Cairo Agreement that was signed in May 94 was an interim solution which established a Palestinian authority in Gaza and in Jericho, which will be expanded in the next phase of negotiation throughout the West Bank. It was agreed that the negotiations with reference to the final status will begin not later than 2 years after the implementation of the Gaza-Jericho Agreement, meaning in May 1996. What will be the result of the negotiation? Nobody knows, and we found out that in our region, many creative and original solutions can come into being, and we'll wait and see what will be the results of those negotiations.
I'd like to talk about relations between Israel and Jordan since last year's agreement was signed, and what that has meant for daily life in both your countries. What has changed? I've had friends tell me things like making a phone call now is so much easier between the two countries. And if you would give some specific examples.
I think that life in Israel prior to the peace era was kind of a living on an island. We had the Mediterranean on one side, and we had borders on the other side. Borders that you could not cross. There was the first breakthrough with Egypt in 79, which opened a territorial gate and a bridge that one could drive from one place to the other, so Israelis could drive from Israel to Egypt. Beyond that, it was living in isolation. You could not make a phone call neither to Jordan nor to any other of the Arab countries. This has changed. You can phone directly. The Allenby Bridge, which was the traditional connection between one side of the Jordan River to the other, was open only to people in UN vehicles or some other dignitaries. Later on, it was open to tourists. Now, Israelis can travel to Jordan, Jordanians can travel to Israel, and the lines are so long that it seems that everyone is interested to see what was happening beyond those barbed wires. When we look up at the air, we could see Jordanian planes crossing Israeli skies, and the Israeli planes can overfly Jordan. Many negotiations are being conducted between Jordan and Israel on many specific things. There are many great programs and projects that are around the corner. Those projects will change the life of the people in Israel and in Jordan. Those are projects which cover practically all spheres of life, whether it will be in the field of water, energy, environment, dealing together with problems which do not know boundaries, because any sea contamination, any flies, and we've discussed issues of flies flying from one place to the other, they don't know borders. Now, we can really cooperate and solve these kind of problems which affect the life of each individual in those countries.
Talking on this edition of Common Ground with Shlomo Gur, Israel's deputy ambassador to the United States, and Fayez Tiraune, Jordan's ambassador to the U.S. Printed transcripts and audio cassettes of this program are available from Journal Graphics. Please listen at the end of the broadcast for details. Common Ground is a service of the Stanley Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. Ambassador Tiraune, I'm very interested in your observations about changes in daily life.
Well, we signed the treaty about 7 months ago, and still the treaty has a lot of technical bilateral agreements that should be concluded, and it was stipulated in the treaty itself that within 9 months those agreements should be concluded. We already finished, I think, four of these, but many of them are in their final draft form. Here we are referring to tourism and transportation, telecommunication, civil aviation, and whatever, to trade and environment and all facets of life, basically. And this is the manifestation of the full peace that we are talking about. A treaty of peace is a political manifestation of the commitment to peace. And basically it is between governments. Even if we have the ratification of the parliaments and by our democratic institutions, but still it is an official peace. What we are after is to put a model in the heart of the Middle East, in the hub area, that peace between people is achievable.
A model of Israel and Jordan.
Israel and Jordan for the whole Middle East. Basically, because the Syrians and the Lebanese are still negotiating, and there are still other Arab countries that did not conclude a treaty of peace with Israel, or not necessarily a treaty of peace, at least an agreement with Israel and so on. That's why that is our definition of warm peace. We want the people to mingle and to exchange and to do that. And what the government can do is to remove all kind of barriers, to open passages. We have the north, the northern and the southern crossing points. We want to lift the trade boycott that has been since the beginning of the conflict. We want to arrange for land transport. We want to arrange for, we have, again, as Mr. Gore said, we have a lot of joint projects like joint infrastructure, basically. International airport in the south, using maybe some of the facilities in the Mediterranean ports of Israel to Jordan, and the like. Complementarities, there are a lot of complementarities in this. These are the issues that would put the whole economic sphere in a way that people will start to feel the changes in their daily life. I wouldn't say that already the Jordanians felt that. They did not. And this is one snag, I would say, that people basically are short-termers. They want things tomorrow morning or even yesterday, especially those who are unemployed, especially those who are below the poverty line and so on. Then they started to question us, what did you bring us?
Right, seven months later, and we're
But still, on the other hand, you can feel the results. First of all, we agreed very much on the rightful allocations of water, and we have a joint project now with Israel, and the Germans are overseeing the financing of that. That would increase the quantity of water that Jordan have in the Jordan Rift Valley. We have the Jordanian occupied territories being restored, and the international boundaries were delineated, and I think in the final process of demarcation. And this is extremely important to both Israel and Jordan, to have the international borders well-defined and put. Of course, we agreed on the security arrangements, and these are the major points. Now, as far as economics and so on, the opening of the passages themselves, the crossing points, created a kind of a movement on tourism. Now we have a capacity of 100% occupancy rate in our hotels, for example. As you know, that it is the dream of every Israeli to come to Petra. And now we are, we cannot absorb basically the flow of this.
So there is a huge
there is a huge investment in the hotel business, for example. This would create a lot of backward and forward linkages, or what we call the positive externalities in economic terms, where other industries will emerge from that. But this will take time. The most important thing is always to show the good intention that we are showing.
Ambassador Tirani, you mentioned the issue of water, and I think except in certain parts of the United States where we have desert climate, it's kind of hard for people to understand the importance of water. But could you talk a little bit about the importance of water in the Middle East and how much this is at the heart of the negotiations and what's going on between countries?
At the beginning of the century, maybe there were about 1.5 million people living between the Mediterranean and the Jordanian desert. And now we have about 13 million or 12 to 13 million people. They all came either from within or from without the region, but nobody brought with him any single drop of water. So the shortage is there. And the sources of water are very scarce. We have two small rivers the Yarmouk and the Jordan rivers, and even in the Jordan River now, the saline level is very, very high, and the underground water is not in abundance, and we don't have the amount of rain that would be suffice for all the needs. So it was a source of tension, and it was a source of wars even between the countries of the region. Now, it is an incentive for the countries within the peace process, and this is the essence of the peace process, that instead of sitting across the table, we are sitting on the same side of the table facing the challenges. One of them is the shortage of water.
Mr. Gerda, do you want to address the water issue?
Yeah, I think water symbolizes more than anything else the psychological change that the region had gone through. Because for years, as Ambassador Tarano rightfully said, water was a source of tension, and many books were written about the next war in the Middle East that will be the war on water resources. Now, we all knew intellectually that no matter what kind of sharing of water will be in the region, there will be lack of water for all the inhabitants. So instead of trying to share the lack of water, we decided that we'll work together in order to increase the pie, so everyone would be able to really to supply the needs of its population. And I think here, once we were able to overcome the psychological barrier and to start thinking regionally, start thinking in terms of cooperation, we realize that we can come to some arrangements and some solutions that will enable all of us to benefit from modern technology and from sources that come from elsewhere. And in the negotiations, both bilateral and multilaterals, we are trying to feel long-term and short-term solution for this lack of water. And what we are trying to do is really working parallel on long-term solutions which involve either bringing water or desalinating on large magnitudes, and at the same time trying to utilize better the scarce resources that we have.
I have one final question, and I'm sure as both of you have traveled throughout the United States, you discover that most Americans are pretty confused when it comes to the Middle East and have little understanding about it. And I think a lot of times there is the idea that the problems in the Middle East have been due to religious differences. But how much do you attribute problems between states as competition over resources? We've been talking about water.
I think the source of the problem was the fact that when Israel was established in the region, it was not accepted as part of the region. It was considered to be a kind of foreign introduction to a region, and therefore it was rejected. As earlier on this program, Ambassador Tarando referred to the changes that took place in the region, and especially to the fact that war was not used as last resort, but first resort. We had to go into many confrontations and war in the region. Only when the region realized to accept, and the countries realized to accept each other in the region, and try to think how one could best use best be adjusted to that phenomenon. I think once we've embarked on that road, we were able to progress on the road to peace and the road to tranquility and the road to acceptance of one another. And I think we are at the beginning of this long journey, but a journey that can be very successful.
Ambassador Tarani, I'll give you the final word.
Well, I have to be very frank here and to say that the Arabs and the Israelis are experts in losing opportunities. And I think that the Arabs at the beginning of the conflict and even before the 1948 lost an opportunity for accepting the partition plan, which King Abdullah, the grandfather of King Hussein, called the Arabs to accept the bi-statal or the two-state approach on Palestine. But things went on the right direction, the wrong direction, and the war erupted in 1948. And since then, yes, Israel wanted to be accepted in the region, but it did not work to that endeavor, basically, especially after 1967. We had a series of Security Council resolutions, but never one was implemented in as far as the Middle East or in our area was concerned. So after these long years of losing opportunities, and one of them was Camp David again. It was an opportunity for the other Arab countries, but maybe the time was not ripe because of the Cold War and the East-West and whatever. But I think that we reached a mature point of exhaustion, if I want to put it this way, that religion as such is not a source of conflict. We are all the sons of Abraham, and we are the three religions are in our party, in our part of the world, and we belong to the same God. So religion is not. And in all honesty, that if we find extreme religious groups on both sides, the Arabs and the Israelis, I still believe that this is a political agenda, that religion is used for certain political objectives. But what would the religion do with the Arab-Israeli conflict? This is was a political. It manifested itself in interpretations of rights, whether it is water or land or security. But those who are against the peace process for political reasons are using religion on both sides of the divide. So it is important that we should not indulge the religion into the issue, and sit down and put our problems on the table and solve them politically, legally, economically. And this is the only way to do it.
Dr. Fayez Taraune has been my guest on Common Ground. He's the ambassador from Jordan to the United States. We also heard from Shlomo Gur, the deputy ambassador from Israel to the U.S. For Common Ground, I'm Mary Gray Davidson. For a printed transcript or audio cassette of this program, please send $5 per transcript or $11.70 per cassette to Common Ground, show number 9523, Journal Graphics, 1535 Grant Street, Denver, Colorado, 80203. To order by credit card, call toll-free 1-800-825-5746. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation or you have some comments about the program, please write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. Again, the toll-free number to order cassettes or transcripts is 1-800-825-5746. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.